Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, welcome back to another edition of the Between the Tackles podcast. Yes, we are back for a second time this week. This is the new format. Deal with it. It's going to be Mondays and Thursdays. So Mondays will be a little bit of a recap. Thursdays will be a little bit of a look of ahead. We got a fully loaded show as usual. Burge and Manish alongside as well. Before we get to the week ahead, let's cap this week off. Let's cap week 12 off real quick. Two definitive statements I have. Bucks. Dead. Rams, best team in the league with a bullet. I don't really know what else to say.
Yeah, I'll hop on that and say Matthew Stafford, in all likelihood, NFL MVP.
Yeah, I don't think there's any question about that at this point. The stretch of games he's put together has been incredible. No interceptions in that stretch. For the Bucks, it's kind of disappointing. You see Baker Mayfield get hurt with a sling on his non-throwing shoulder. They seem like they might be this year's like Detroit Lions, the team that really started off good, but then by the end was just completely ravished by injuries.
Yeah, and I think I don't know. Todd Bowles is like obviously proven to be like a good NFL head coach, like small g good NFL head coach, very serviceable, good head coach. But like, dude, putting Baker back in to throw that Hail Mary is some of the most negligent coaching I've seen at any level of sports. I think that's at some point you have to save guys from themselves, and I think Baker is exactly that guy.
Go ahead.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think given what we know now, it really didn't make much sense to have Baker in there for that Hail Mary. I don't know what the communication was between Baker, the doctors, and Todd Bowles before that. You know, initially when he got hurt, you know, he did come back in and play. So if it was really bothering him, he probably wouldn't have told Bowles, but it would be incumbent upon the medical staff to give the head coach an update about, you know, what's the severity of this injury? Can he play the rest of the game? Do you need to be cautious with it? You know, those are important conversations that needed to be had on the sidelines. Maybe they happened, maybe they didn't, but if they did happen, and they kept Baker in there for that final play, it's a little bit curious.
I saw people saying, what's the big deal? It's not a throwing shoulder too, but like, if you think about like the proper, like NFL, like proper football throwing mechanics, like ripping your front, like part of your body open to like turn and get velocity on the ball is like a huge thing. Mm-hmm. And like, also like a lot of what quarterbacks do, especially Baker Mayfield, who is like, he's an athletic guy, but I the best part about his game is his ability to be a pocket passer and step up in the pocket, and like stepping up into guys rushing into you with your front shoulder, like being injured, is probably something that like you can probably, it's probably really tough to get off your mind, really tough to play around. But yeah, I don't know. That was kind of a stinker on Monday night, on Sunday night. Oh no, was that Monday night? Yeah,
that was Sunday night.
That was Sunday night. Who played Monday night? Why am I getting myself mixed up?
The Niners and the Panthers.
Yes, the Niners and the Panthers. You guys have any thoughts about that game? They were clamoring for Mac Jones in the friggin' second quarter of that game, which is sad in itself.
Just a lot of turnovers. Mm-hmm. Purdy with three in the first half. Bryce Young, you know, ended the game with two. It just seemed like it was kind of just a nothing burger game. I didn't end up watching this one because I don't get ESPN in my house. But yeah, just watching the stat line with Brock Purdy. I mean, I can understand why the fans were clamoring for Mac Jones.
Yeah, dude, that's just, I feel like in that Shanahan offense, you basically just like don't turn the ball over, get what's there. And like, you just have to like, you can't like play outside the frame of the offense. And I feel like sometimes Purdy tries to do too much and play a little over his head. Yeah, they gave that guy like 200 and what million dollars guaranteed, right? Didn't they just pay him? Anyway,
yeah.
Burge, bust out the spreadsheet. Let's get weird.
All right, it was an interesting week. Manish, the clear winner of the week, 3-0. I think might have been for the first time this year. First time going.
Whoa! Yeah. I'm pretty sure that happened at some point in the past.
No, that is your first three. You had a
in
2-1.
Felt I should have gone 3-0 many, many times.
Well, 2-0-1 is technically undefeated, right? So he's been undefeated. That's before. True.
Well, hasn't had a clean sweep, but he has put together a good stretch of wins the last 2 weeks. 5-1 over the last 2 weeks. Joe 1-2, and I finished the week 2-1. Overall records: Joe in the basement by one game, 15-20-1. Manish 16-19-1. I am at 19-17, so just above 500.
That's good, Burge.
Yeah, so we're right there. Going into this week here, my first game that I am going to pick is against Manisha's team. And I'm going to pick the Chicago Bears, who are +7 against the Philadelphia Eagles in Philadelphia. We talked a little bit on the last episode about the performance of the Philadelphia Eagles blowing that 21-point lead to Dallas. Manish, you know, has been very vocal on this podcast about his disdain for the offensive play as well as the defensive play in Philadelphia. So, and we also talked about the Bears. The Bears are surprisingly 8-3. They're playing well with Caleb Williams and Ben Johnson there. And I like the points in this. I mean, the Bears may not win this, but I like them to cover the touchdown spread on the road there. So the Bears are my first pick. My second pick,
I want to say something about the Bears here, dude. I think I love what the Bears are putting together, and I hope they keep winning because I think the compelling story about the 2024 draft class is only going to get better, especially if Jaden Daniels comes back and has a representative year next year. I don't know. I'm always rude. I just think it would be a very cool story if all three of those quarterbacks in the top three end up being a like pretty legitimate franchise player.
Definitely agree with that. I mean, it's going to be a great storyline down the stretch here. Second pick, I'm going back with a team I've picked quite a few times this season. It's the LA Chargers. They are at home versus the lowly Raiders. This is kind of a pick against bad team pick, like Joe did either last week or the week before. The Raiders are a mess. They fired their offensive coordinator and I think brought back the offensive coordinator. I can't remember the guy's name, but he was previously the offensive coordinator for the Raiders at some point in the past. They're just an absolute mess of a franchise right now. Mark Davis can't get out of his own way with firing coaches and paying these guys. I think Chip Kelly was the highest paid coordinator going into this season and just didn't work out there for the Raiders. The Chargers, they're starting to get a little bit healthier. I think Marion Hampton was activated or at least designated to return from IR, I think as of today, which is going to be a huge, huge help for them down the stretch. I mean, Vidal has filled in pretty well there, but Hampton definitely is the clear cut number one running back for Justin Herbert's offense there. I like them. They're -9.5 at home. It's a gut pick for me. So give me the Chargers. My lock of the week.
Wait, real quick before you get to
go ahead.
At what point do we start getting on Brady in Vegas? Wasn't he brought in to have some expertise in like organizational excellence and kind of like stop the embarrassment from you know what I mean? Like he's brought in like an Elway type, like in Denver. He's brought in to be the Don. You know what I mean? He's brought into like I feel like he was supposed to be playing that role, dude. They showed him, what was it, week one or two? He's in the booth with a headset on. Like, at what point can we get on top?
I mean, we probably could start. I mean, he's wearing a couple of different hats right now, being in the announcer booth and as a part owner of a team. I mean, this is his first year of ownership, if I'm not mistaken, right? His first year. And so we talk about not getting on coaches and everything, you know, too early. Like, let's give him some time to maybe bring some of his experience into that organization. But I mean, the Raiders have been such a mess for such a long time that even just bringing in a guy like him as a former player, as an owner, even if he's the greatest of all time, like how much of a difference is that really going to make there for them? So
obviously not enough.
No, clearly. Lock of the week. I'm taking the Atlanta Falcons -2.5 at the New York Jets. Again, another situation where I'm picking against a really bad team. The Jets, we kind of talked about it in our group chat about how they've been out whining, talking a little bit too much. It's just another disgraceful organization from top to bottom, starting with Woody Johnson at the owner, all the way down right now. The talent on the roster, they're just a bad team. And Atlanta's coming off a big win against a divisional opponent in the Saints, kind of snapped their 5-game losing streak there. They're still trying to, you know, work their way back into maybe a good run down the stretch. Kirk Cousins has filled in pretty well since he took over for Michael Penix that game last week. I was a victim of picking against them. Manish was a benefactor of picking them to win. And I like them to build off of that win last week, especially against the lowly New York Jets. So give me Atlanta -2.5. Manish, you're up. Who do you got?
All right, well, my first pick is going to be the Indianapolis Colts bouncing back from that tough overtime loss in Kansas City. They're laying 4.5 to the Texans in Indy. Texans coming off a signature win on Thursday night, beating the Bills, really neutralizing Josh Allen in every imaginable way. Will Anderson looked like an unstoppable force, looked like Lawrence Taylor, to be completely honest with you. Don't know who the quarterback is going to be for Houston, whether it's going to be Davis Mills again or C.J. Stroud. I don't think it necessarily matters. The Colts are going to get Jonathan Taylor going. I know that's not going to be an easy chore because of Houston's excellent defense from top to bottom, but typically this season, whenever Jonathan Taylor has underperformed, and it hasn't happened often, he bounces back in a very big way. In all but one game in which he had under 100 yards rushing, he had over 100 the following week. And in his worst game a couple weeks back against Pittsburgh, when he had under 50 yards rushing, he bounced back with over 200 yards and 3 touchdowns in that overseas overtime win against the Falcons. So I would anticipate a heavy dose of Jonathan Taylor. I anticipate him getting right, even though he's going up against a formidable defense. Because regardless of the outcome last week, the Colts controlled much of that game in Arrowhead. They're for real. They didn't win last week, but they are definitely for real. And I would be surprised if they drop their second in a row, 8-3. I anticipate them winning their ninth game by the end of the weekend. My second game is another relatively large number that I'm laying. Denver on the road Sunday night, laying 6.5 to the Washington Commanders. The Commanders' defense is a complete joke. 31st in total defense. Only the Bengals are worse. They're among the handful of worst teams against the run, among the handful of worst teams against the pass. They can't stop anybody. And even though the Broncos haven't blown very many teams out, 7 of their 9 wins have been by one possession. So they're typically white knucklers. I just think their defense is way too good for them to lose this game. I think Bo Nix can move the ball against this fairly porous Commanders defense. R.J. Harvey didn't really get going as the primary back before their bye week, now that J.K. Dobbins is out. But I think, coming off the bye, Sean Payton will scheme up some things so that Harvey gets going. I think this is one of those games where the Broncos do win and win comfortably. And my lock of the week, it's actually my lock of the year, or my lock of the remaining part of the year, is a Thanksgiving gift from the Vegas odds makers. The Bengals are getting 7 points against the Ravens. I do not understand why. Yes, the Bengals are 3-8, but this is the return of Joe Burrow, and Joe Burrow has typically carved up the Ravens. Now, the Bengals haven't carved up the Ravens, no pun intended. It's on Thanksgiving. The Bengals haven't, but I don't need the Bengals to win. I need them to cover 7 points, and I think they'll do that. Joe Burrow, his last 2 games against the Ravens, 9 touchdowns. He had a 5-touchdown game, a 4-touchdown game. He had over 800 yards passing in those 2 games. You can say, will he be rusty coming off the injury, the foot injury, toe injury? Fair question, but I think he's going to hit the ground running, frankly. Ja'Marr Chase coming back off of his 1-game suspension as well. There will be no T. Higgins, but this is not the Ravens team that we remember over the last several years. This is a team that struggled for the better part of last week in beating the New York Jets. And frankly, if not for a Breece Hall fumble as he was going in for a touchdown midway through the fourth quarter, things may have turned out very differently for Baltimore. They've got a lot to play for in the AFC North. It's a rivalry game. Joe Burrow is going to be amped up. It's going to be a standalone game on Thanksgiving. I would not be surprised if the Bengals win, but I would be stunned if they didn't cover that 7-point number. So big game for Burrow, big game for Chase, and hopefully a big game for people that are taking the points in Cincinnati.
Dude, I want to bet my entire being on Bengals money line now. I'm fired up after that. Hell yeah.
Yeah. Real quick, Joe, before you get started there, I just want to touch on your Colts pick. I really like that pick because it is a prime situation for Jonathan Taylor to bounce back. And despite what Houston's defense did to Josh Allen in that game on Thursday night, James Cook averaged 6.8 yards a carry in that game and went for over 100 yards, ripped off a nice long touchdown. I totally expect that to occur in this game on Sunday. So I really, really like that pick.
Yeah, and Joe, before you get to your picks, it's really a weird week. There are some great games before the weekend. Yep. I think all three Thanksgiving games are great. You've got division rivals in Green Bay and Detroit. You've got the Dallas Cowboys who are back fighting for a playoff spot against the Chiefs who are fighting for their lives. And then you've got that Bengals-Ravens rivalry. And then on Black Friday, you've got 2-8-3 teams in Chicago and Philadelphia. I'm not a big fan of the Sunday slate or the Monday night slate, but the four games before we hit the weekend are going to be pretty fun.
The Jackson Dart versus Drake May Bowl. Monday night's pretty sweet as well. Well, speaking of the loaded Thanksgiving slate, my first pick is going to be Detroit minus 2.5 at home against the Packers. Detroit's got to get right at some point. Jared Goff has a 15 QBR the last two or three weeks, so I expect him to bounce back at home. That stadium's going to be absolutely rocking on Thanksgiving. The Packers remind me of that team that's just loaded, that just can't put it together at the same time. They have one week where the defense plays really well and they win a game 13-10. They have one week where the offense plays really well and they score 40 points, but they can't hold their opponent. They can't hold their opponent. It just feels like they can't put it together. It feels like Detroit might be catching them at the right time. They are playing at home. This is a rivalry game. I think it's going to be tight, but I think Detroit can pull it out laying the 2.5. So give me Detroit minus 2.5 at home versus Packers on Thanksgiving. A little later in the day on Thanksgiving, give me Dallas plus 3 at home versus KC. I'm not 100% sure that I would take Dallas money line here. I know it's a short spread, but KC has been winning by the skin of their teeth. I wouldn't be surprised if this is another game where KC is lining up for a field goal down 1 or 2 points and coming out of there with a 1 or 2 point victory. Dallas is a home dog. I love betting on home dogs. I'll probably put Dallas money line in some kind of parlay for the weekend. But it was a little bit scary watching KC's running game get going and then going into Dallas where their defense has been pretty porous, pretty poor this year. But they have been coming on lately with their trade deadline acquisition. So give me Dallas plus the points, plus 3 at home versus KC on Thanksgiving. And then my lock of the week, dare I say lock of the millennia. Give me Jacksonville minus 6.5 at Tennessee. We've been talking for the entirety of, I think, all of my Jacksonville talk the last couple of weeks has been based around their running game. If they get their running game going, they have a couple different talented backs with a couple different skill sets. If they get their running game going, they're going to win games. Tennessee is 25th against the run. They let up like 130 yards against the run, letting up almost 115 in their last three. So give me Jacksonville minus 6.5 at Tennessee as my mortal lock of the millennia.
Hard to come back from that if you're not right, Joe.
Dude, if this pick doesn't hit, I'm gonna have. All right, here's what we'll do. Let's do another podcast bet. All right, here's what we're gonna do for the rest of the year. Boy. If this mortal lock of the millennia, Jacksonville minus 6.5. Make sure that line is right when we're recording right now. But Jacksonville minus 6.5. If that lock of the millennia doesn't hit, my dog will be making the rest of my picks. I don't know how we're going to do it, if we're going to put treats or if we're going to do tennis balls or what we're going to do. But long story short, my dog makes the bet and picks for the rest of the podcast year if I don't hit this bet. To go even further, I will place those bets myself that my dog picks. So, yeah.
I like that.
Putting on the line for the mortal lock. One unit on every pick, every week from Farley, and we will use those for the podcast picks as well. Yep, that's the mortal lock in the millennia punishment if it doesn't hit.
I'm really hoping this doesn't hit. I want the Farley picks on the podcast, and I want the video evidence of these picks to come out too. I'm actively rooting for the Tennessee Titans now.
I knew that was going to come back around and bite me in the ass. Like it always does. But anyways, let's get into our power rankings for the week. Manish, we got a new team at number 5.
We do. We have the Sam Darnold-led Seattle Seahawks coming off a misleading final score of a game. They dominated against Tennessee. Tennessee added some window dressing toward the end to make it, you know, a one-score defeat technically. But by and large, you know, the Titans were really not in this game for much of the game. Look, I really like what Seattle's doing. They've flown under the radar for much of the first couple months of the season. They are essentially in a dead heat with the Lions for the second most potent offense in football, points per game, only behind the Indianapolis Colts. They're a top 10 offense, racking up yards. JSN has erupted into becoming the most lethal weapon through the air this season. The guy rolls out of bed and gets a $125, it seems, every single week.
Did you see the stat about him? Through 11 games, he has the third most receiving yards ever. It was like Josh Gordon that year where he had like 2,000 yards in 14 games. It was Tyreek Hill that breakout year with KC. And then Jaxon Smith-Njigba is third on that list with like – it's like a thousand – it's like so many yards through 11 games. It's that's the kind of year he's putting
in. It's unbelievable. And it's funny because if you listen to the Ohio State receivers who played with JSN – for at least 1 year in college, Chris Olave, Garrett Wilson, they said when JSN was drafted that he was the best of that entire group. They all felt that he was the most talented player. You can even throw in Marvin Harrison, I think overlapped with, if not all three of them, at least two of them. They all felt that JSN.
Tampa too, right?
What's that?
Emeka Egbuka from Tampa, wasn't he in that wide receiver room too?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how much overlap there was with, with the other four guys, but
that's on me, guys.
It's okay. The bottom line is that JSN was always a really special talent, and you're seeing, you know, now that DK Metcalf is gone, Tyler Lockett is gone, that not only can he be a wide receiver one, he can be an elite wide receiver one, and you know, he is the centerpiece of that explosive offense. They also, on the flip side, Mike McDonald's defense stops the run. You can't really run on them. They're one of the better run defenses in the league. So that's a good combination. This week is a Sam Darnold revenge game against the Vikings. I think they'll handle them. After that, they've got Atlanta. I think they'll win that game as well. So again, not necessarily a sexy team. They play out Pacific Northwest. There's an East Coast bias. You kind of forget about those teams. But they've put together a tremendous season. They've exceeded what I thought they would be, you know, with a new quarterback, with a head coach, you know, who, you know, still had a lot of proving to do. But right now, to me, they're worthy of a top five ranking. I actually thought they were worthy of a top five ranking, probably, you know, at any point in the last couple weeks as well. But for now, you know, they're a legit team, and if not for the Rams, you know, they'd be leading that division.
They did play together 2 years at Ohio State. Just had to look that up. But yeah, the Seahawks. There, I really hope that it's not one of the. I really hope that Darnold like puts it together in the playoffs, because they could be a pretty formidable opponent. They're a really well rounded team. They can win a couple different ways on offense. Speaking of a well rounded team that can win a couple different ways, we got the Colts weighing in at number four this week. We didn't want to dock them too hard for losing by a point in Arrowhead. Or 3 points in Arrowhead. So, I really don't have much to say about the Colts. I think they still have a lot to prove. I think they're a legitimate team. They're a legitimate deep threat playoff team. I don't think there's any qualms about that. I don't have any qualms about that, at least. But Jonathan Taylor shut down again. And that's the only way you really beat this team, is you really hold him to under his averages. And that's exactly what the Colts did. I mean, that's exactly what KC did. But I expect them to get back on track. I expect them to obviously win that division, host a playoff game, and all that good stuff. So I don't think docking the Colts too much for the win at KC would have been fair to them in the season they've put together. There are some concerning stats out there when you look at like the first whatever, I think it was first eight games of the season versus like the last six or something like that. It's not as pretty, but I think that the Colts, they have the good foundation, like a running game and a defense, to make a deep run in the playoffs. So we're gonna have the Colts at four this week. Burge, get the party streamers. I want a pinata the size of my freaking couch tied to the ceiling in my living room. I want all the Crisco. I want no pants. Talk to me.
I think the biggest win about the Patriots being at three this week is that you and I finally got Manish to move off of them at five. He finally opened the door for us to say, I don't care.
Never should have cracked the door.
And now it's going right up the list. As high as he lets us get them, that's where we're going to be putting them on this podcast.
If you're listening out there and you've never read the book, If You Give a Mouse a Cookie, go pause the podcast right now. Go read the children's book, To Give a Mouse a Cookie. And then come back to this very point and keep listening. Burge, go.
That's a great reference.
It's a great.
We got the Pats at three. They're coming off a win against the Cincinnati Bengals, where they beat them 26-20 on the road. This team keeps winning. They're firing off the wins. I think that our biggest concern with the Patriots is their health and depth on the roster. I think that's going to be this team's Achilles heel if it has one down the stretch. We've talked so much ad nauseum about the schedule, which plays into their favor, especially when as they face these injuries. Luckily, that the team has avoided some significant long term injuries with Will Campbell and Jared Wilson. Their left side of the entire offensive line, that they're going to be back at some point later in the season, which I think was a huge win. They have the Giants coming up on Monday night. The Giants, I don't want to say that they scare me, because they gave the Detroit Lions a little bit of a good run in their game this past week. But I fully expect the Patriots to take care of business going into their bye against the Giants to go in. They're sitting at the best record in the AFC right now. And I think that the Achilles heel of this team and the thing to watch for the Patriots is going to be what else happens on the injury front. I think the bye is well-timed for this team, given the fact that they just started suffering these injuries. So we'll have to see where it plays down the stretch. They got a big divisional game in December against the Buffalo Bills up in Foxborough, which could be for the division, the opportunity for the Patriots to clinch the AFC East, given how the Giants game goes here. So a lot to come on them. I love what they're doing. Joe, we've talked about it. This is house money for us. We're just pumped that we're in this spot after the last four or five seasons that we had to endure, and hosting a home playoff game. Here we go. We're back.
I need a shower.
So
love
this team. So they do have the most wins in the NFL. They played more games than many teams in the NFL. They only have two wins against teams with a winning record. So two of their ten wins are against teams with a winning record. One had a 6-5 record. Those two wins were combined 8 points. So it's not like they're dominating teams with winning records. They've vastly improved, and they should be a playoff team. They deserve that. Their quarterback is playing exceptional for the most part. Their head coach has done an incredible job. Offensive coordinator, incredible job. And I understand what the power rankings are. You can't leave off a 10-win team in the top five, but they're squeaking by a lot of very bad teams. They barely beat the Bengals a few days ago, a Bengals team without Joe Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, and T. Higgins during a pivotal five-minute stretch at the end of that game. So I don't even know did Trey Hendrickson even play? I don't even know if any player of relevance played for the Bengals, and they barely beat Cincinnati. And that's just reality. You guys can talk about how they won by two scores against the Jets, but we all watched that game. That wasn't any kind of blowout. The Jets were actually in that game for most of the game. They beat the Falcons because the Falcons missed an extra point. These are all facts. There's also a fact that they're 10-2, so you cannot deny that. But to act as if that they're back, they're much better than they've been. They're relevant, clearly. But when you say a team is back, that means that team has a legit chance of winning the Super Bowl. And
the Patriots have a legitimate chance to win the Super Bowl.
No, I do not.
They're going to have a bye in the first round and then host.
We don't know if they're going to have the bye.
They need one playoff win to have a shot to win the Super Bowl. I don't know. I feel like that is less crazy to say than saying they're not a Super Bowl contender. They have the best record in the conference. And they've beaten two teams that we've had in the top five this year. And then another team with a winning record. And then another team.
I understand
where you're coming from. But I just think that you're being a little disingenuous saying that they're feasting on bottom feeders and they're not a legitimate Super Bowl threat.
First of all, they absolutely are feasting on bottom feeders. They've played.
First of all, they're not even feasting. We beat the fucking Bengals by 6 points.
They're feasting on bottom feeders. Feasting means wins, not winning by 5, 10, 15. That's what the term means. They're feasting, meaning that they are taking advantage of playing teams that are bad. It's not their fault. They have a last place schedule because they were horrible last year. These are all facts. And I'm not discounting the job that they did because they're winning these games. But when you're talking about, can this team legitimately win a Super Bowl in 2025? Are they quote-unquote back? They're back from the dregs of the league. I absolutely agree with that. But they are not one of the top two or three teams in the NFL. They're three in our power rankings through 12 weeks of the 2025 season. That's all true. You know, Carson Wentz was an MVP candidate through 12 weeks. What is that worth? It's worth nothing. It's great for conversation. But the truth of the matter is they have beaten two teams who have a winning record by a total of 8 points. That's not me saying that they're bad. That's me saying they beat two teams with a winning record. That means they've beaten seven teams with a losing record and one team that is 500. That's it's all
that,
actually
it's accurate. Funny that you say that we're not Pats because on, everybody's not, hating on the Pats. That we, these are
we're
Pats.
Not. No,
we're in that's everyone's it, head.
No, hold on. Yeah, yeah.
This
no,
makes me you so can't, happy. No, you are, on, you wait, can't give the Pats credit. You have to discredit
wait,
it. That wait, means we're back.
Wait,
I don't
hang
care
on.
What your definition of back is. Wait. My definition of back is bringing out all the Pats haters, nitpicking at everything they do.
Okay.
We'll see you in January. That's all I'm saying.
Well, okay,
all right,
listen,
do you
want
to get to the next team who also
on.
Has a bottom 10 strength of schedule and beat the Raiders by 3 points on Thursday Night Football two weeks ago? Are you going to bring that up?
Okay. Are you finished? Are you finished?
Now I am.
Okay. This is a term that I just really don't like. It has nothing to do with the Patriots. It has nothing to do with the Eagles. It has nothing to do with any team. If you're critical of somebody or a team, that does not mean that you're a hater. Hater to me is an oversimplified term, and it's a lazy term. I'm being perfectly honest with you. It's a lazy term. I am not being a hater. I am simply pointing out, after making it abundantly clear, that I think the quarterback has been exceptional, the head coach has done a terrific job in turning around the culture, and the offensive coordinator has done wonders with the young quarterback who has been exceptional. I have stated that, but at the notion that they are some sort of dominant team, and maybe it's just our definitions. You guys are completely biased. I'm not a Patriots hater or a Patriots lover. I'm neither. I'm not on the extreme. You guys are clearly on the extreme. What I will say is that just because you guys have reversed course, which you should be lauded for, everybody should laud. If you're an objective NFL fan, you should laud the Patriots for reversing course. But the problem that I have, not only with Patriots fans in this particular discussion, but with Eagles fans, I'm from Philadelphia. I'm born and raised a Philadelphia Eagles fan. The problem I have with Eagles fans even, and they actually won the Super Bowl last year, is that there's this tendency to take everything to an extreme. And for Eagles fans, it's, well, we're starting a dynasty. Well, you once won Super Bowl. You're not starting a dynasty. And in this particular case, it's Patriots fans. We're back. And again, maybe our definitions of back are different. And evidently, it appears that way. But when I hear somebody say a team is back, that means there are going to be a problem in the current year. I do not believe that. We'll disagree with that. And I think all three of us can agree that two of the three of us, when we talk about the Patriots, are biased, and one is not. I don't hate the Patriots. I just don't.
You two are biased, and I'm objective, as always. Anyways, let's get to number two, Manish.
I catch a stray
Broncos,
there.
Yeah. The Broncos. So for all the reasons I outlined, the picking the Broncos, laying the 6.5, exceptional defense. They're coming off the bye week, playing kind of a joker team in the Washington Commanders, a Super Bowl winning head coach who has proven that he can go the distance. And we talked about this before we started recording. I'm not sold on the Broncos. Frankly, I'm not sold on anyone other than the team that's going to be number one on our list. All of these teams have flaws. The biggest flaw that I see in Denver is Bo Nix. Statistically, he's not horrific. 18 touchdowns, 8 picks, not horrible. But if you watch the games, you know that he is holding them back in some significant ways. So how far can they go? I don't know. Are they actually the second best team in the NFL? Well, through week 12, they're number two on our power rankings, but they're highly flawed. And I think, as all of us agreed earlier off air, I think any of these teams can be beaten by any of these other teams, which will make for a very interesting playoff. I don't know if I'll be perfectly honest with you. I think the Chiefs can beat every team on this list other than the number one team, and they might be able to beat the team that's number one. And they're not even in our top five. So take that for what it's worth. But you got to give them credit. They've won 8 in a row. As I've said, hasn't been pretty, hasn't been dominant. Seven of their nine wins have been by one possession, but the defense is so good. And I think that really, for me, separates them from these other teams that we've just discussed. It's a Super Bowl caliber defense, and I don't really think that's up for question.
I think that it's funny that you say that, Manish. Let's go ahead and agree on something right here. Let's break some bread. Let's find some common ground. I totally agree. I think the biggest difference why I agree with the Broncos over the Pats and the Broncos over any of these teams is that even though the Seahawks offense is elite, I just think the Sam Darnold factor still looms over their head. I don't think there's any of that with the Broncos defense. If you had to take any unit, offense or defense, like besides the Rams offense this year, it's got to be the Broncos defense. Like, they're a dominant unit. They can rush the passer. They can defend the pass. They're a top 10 defense against the run. And I think, just to play devil's advocate against myself a second ago, I need the Patriots to keep winning, because I think going to Arrowhead is where the season goes to die, as it usually does when the Patriots go to Arrowhead. Doesn't matter if we have fucking Steve Grogan, Bledsoe, Brady, Mac Jones, or Drake May as quarterback. It never goes well in Denver. Burge, any Broncos thoughts?
They're undefeated at home this year too, and I was going to touch on Casey the whole
at home. Yep.
the home field thing is real. The elevation is real, and I know it may be coming at it from a quote unquote biased point of view, but the Patriots through their entire dynasty had real problems going up to Denver to play Denver there. That was where the Champ Bailey, Ben Watson play happened. They lost that game. They lost to Peyton Manning up there. It's a house of horrors for the Patriots. And I think that the elevation plays a significant part in that. And I would not want to be any of these teams having to go to Denver in late January in the AFC Championship game against that defense, because I agree with Manish when you're talking about the defense there, they are a real threat. I was pretty bullish on the Broncos, you know, early on, where I was not a believer in them, but after seeing their defense over the last few weeks, you're spot on with them being a Super Bowl caliber defense, with Bo Nix being the potential weak link there.
That's another team that's just like, if they get a legitimate core, dude, even like the pieces around Bo Nix on offense aren't bad at all. Like, I feel like they have some reliable pass catchers and some decent backs. I don't know why. That'd be a pretty attractive destination if I was like a quarterback looking to go like steal a ring. Anyways, I think we've talked about it ad nauseum. We got the Rams at one. The Rams are going to be at one until they – I think the Rams could probably lose a game at this point, and we still keep them at number one.
Yep.
Because I would – I mean, the Rams are head and shoulders above teams 2 through 32 on this team – on this list. They have it absolutely going. Like, Matt Stafford, his hair is on fire. They absolutely kicked the absolute dog crap out of Baker Mayfield. They're just a well-rounded team. They can run even though they have a lot of injuries in their backfield, they're still able to run the ball. Their short passing game is sucking up a lot of their short yardage work. They have two elite pass catchers. They had one tight end go down. They have a tight end right behind them to pick up the slack. They're loaded on defense. They're young on defense. I don't know. There's so many things you could say about this Rams team that we've said every single week. They just keep on rolling.
Yeah, I mean, I'm looking at their schedule. There's two games on there that would be circled for me to watch with the Rams, and that's when they host the Lions, and then a Thursday night game right after that up in Seattle. And I think that those two games are gonna be great to see, where probably more of a measuring stick game for the Lions and the Seahawks. I mean, that division, the NFC West, is gonna be fantastic to watch down the stretch. There's a few fantastic matchups in December for that division.
Well, that
really
Rams
get a gauge
Seahawks
on those teams.
That Rams-Seahawks game could be for the division and the number one seed in the NFC, right? Yeah.
Could be on the table at that point. So, yeah, I mean, we've talked about the Rams quite a bit. They have the MVP. They've been playing unbelievable on both sides of the ball. And I think, like we've agreed on, like, they're the consensus best team in the league. And probably, for me, the only team that I have a hard time finding a flaw for.
Agreed. Manish, you want to hit me with a sleeper?
Oh yeah, you know, I'm going to a team that I think most people go to when they're looking to start fantasy football players. That's the New York Jets. Like, who wouldn't want a piece of the Jets? I mean, you got to get a piece of the Jets, right? Now I'm gonna go with John Metchie. You know, great story for everything that he overcame health wise. He had a form of blood cancer, overcame that, and honestly, a really nice deadline trade by Darren Mooji. He got Metchie for Michael Carter, the slot corner who played fairly well the first couple years of his career, but had been dealing with injuries and, you know, fallen out of favor with the new coaching staff. And, you know, I don't know what John Metchie's going to ultimately be. You know, they're decimated at the wide receiver position. Garrett Wilson, you know, probably won't come back this season. So they got Adonai Mitchell and John Metchie as their top two guys, Tyrod Taylor throwing to him. So, you know, he's going to get opportunities. Had a good game last week, 60 yards and a touchdown. I just think that the targets will be there for him because there's not that many options that Tyrod Taylor has. So if you're looking for, you know, a desperation guy to throw on your flex, I think you can do a lot worse than John Metchie.
Didn't Michael Carter make a huge error in the Eagles game against the Cowboys too? So like salt in the wound as well.
Yeah, and the long catch and run, the George Pickens has set up the game-winning field goal.
He knocked into his own player, yes.
He knocked into Quinyon Mitchell. And I think that's more of a case of not having the practice reps. It's a matter of whether, you know, he's supposed to go under Mitchell without getting too technical or over Mitchell. There's a little confusion there, and he essentially just picked Mitchell, and that, you know, ultimately proved costly for the Eagles.
Barish, what do you got for me? I need a flex. I need a flex play, a kid.
I did a deep dive here, and the guy that I'm calling my sleeper is Parker Washington with the Jaguars. He's coming off a game where you know, he had a five receptions, 70 yards, and a touchdown. Brian Thomas is working his way back from injury. Not sure how much he'll be involved coming back from injury for the Jaguars. Parker Washington's available in over 50 to 60% of your leagues out there. If you need a flex play here, I think he's a guy. He's put together a few good games in Brian Thomas's absence. I think he could be a hit this week playing against the Tennessee Titans, a team that allows quite a bit of fantasy points to wide receivers.
Love that. I thought you meant a totally different guy when we were talking about it before. That's how bad. That's how deep we're going here. So my sleeper this week is going to be Mike Gesicki. Joe Burrow's back. Mike Gesicki's back. He seemed pretty fired up against the Patriots in the first half there. Playing with Joe Flacco, he kind of petered out of gas in the second half. So he kind of petered out as well. But I expect, like Manish said, I expect this game with the Ravens in Cincinnati to be points, points, points. I think Joe Burrow is going to be dropping back to pass 40, 45, 50 times in this game. I think Gesicki's going to have 6, 7, 8 targets. All you're looking for with a sleeper is somebody who has the opportunity just to maybe get some red zone opportunity or some high volume opportunity. And I think that's exactly what you're looking for Gesicki this week. Is a great flex option or a second tight end option if you're in one of those leagues. But I suck at fantasy football, so I don't know why you would take that pick anyway. Anybody have anything else?
No, that's it for me, man.
All right, well, that was the inaugural second leg of the bi-weekly episode format for Between the Tackles. I'm Joe, Berge and Manish alongside as well. We'll catch you next week. Goodbye.
Happy Thanksgiving.